Choke points. Brought to you by Online Trading Academy. Granite Falls drivers are going to lose their primary route to Highway 9 on several occasions over the summer to ensure that migrating fish have better access to spawning grounds. Never get between a salmon and a spawning ground. Here's Chris Sullivan.
Yeah, Washington, as you know, Dave, is under a federal court order to restore fish habitat that is blocked by roads. And for the last few years, the state's been replacing blocked or impassable culverts to be in compliance under that federal injunction. The state's replaced more than 300 of these culverts so far, costing several hundreds of millions of dollars. It's estimated that this federal ruling will cost the state more than $2 billion
Yikes.
By the year 2030, because they have several hundred of these culverts to replace. And so it's a very large price tag to go along with this. And the latest culvert to be replaced is blocking Little Pilchuck Creek, which is between Lake Stevens and Granite Falls, running right under SR 92, which is the main thoroughfare, if you can call it that, getting between Granite Falls and Lake Stevens. The closure is right at the intersection of SR 92 and Machias Road. Francis Federisco with the Washington Department of Transportation says they will need to close the road for two full weekends and then for a 13-day stretch later this summer. The first weekend closure starts this Friday. That's tomorrow. The next one is next weekend.
They won't be able to take 92 to get from Lake Stevens to Granite Falls and vice versa. We do have some very relatively small detour routes, one for small cars and trucks, and then a different detour route for larger trucks. We didn't want to route them through the neighborhoods in the area.
Those truck that truck detour is going to send them a little bit further away than the smaller cars.
We're sending the larger haulers and commercial trucks to State Route 9 and 84th Street because obviously we don't want 16-wheelers heading through. And then small cars and some light trucks will be able to take 44th, 139th, kind of just do a little three rights to make a left situation in the area.
So you should be able to get around this relatively okay. I mean, about 10 to 12,000 cars a day use 92, so it's pretty reasonably well used. Federisco says this is a complicated culvert replacement that includes moving a lot of dirt and eventually rerouting Little Pilchuck Creek.
The first two weekend closures, this weekend and next weekend, are just to stabilize the hillside, make sure everything is in ready form for all the work that we're going to be doing. We're disrupting quite a bit of real estate out there to make this new culvert happen.
The current 6-foot by 12-foot culvert just doesn't do the trick anymore. It's going to be replaced by a 60-foot span that's going to be built over a brand new creek bed that they're going to put in there. That should reduce the water level and make it easier for those juvenile fish to get through.
We're going to have to redirect the creek back to its natural state. It's going to be wider. It's going to flow more slowly. It's going to really help the environmental issues. Then we're going to dam up that existing culvert. We're going to put a nice new structure over the wider creek bed and then put the road back on top of it.
The state says this new culvert will give fish access to about 30 miles of habitat that they can't get to right now. The date for that final 13-day full closure hasn't been finalized yet, but it will be done after the July 4th holiday and before the start of the school year, so it won't impact there. The cost of this particular project is $6 million.
Wow. So they're, let me get this straight, they're adding more fish lanes to the creek.
That is correct. They're adding a lot more fish lanes. And what's happened is the creek is filled up and that culvert has gotten so small and is that the water goes through at such a fast rate because it's such a small area that the juvenile fish can't swim back against the current, even though this creek is tiny. So they're going to widen it out and make it a more kind of a natural area for them. And so that should help them. But, you know, the cost for drivers is some significant slowing.
Couldn't they make that into an express toll creek and recoup some of the cost from the fish?
Well, it's possible. I mean, some of those fish, if they're hatchery, they do have transponders in them, don't they?
That's
we
what
could
I'm
just
thinking.
Click the toll on them. Who will pay that toll, though?
I would think you'd pay it at the fish market.
So we would end up paying for the... we're paying for it anyway with $6 million.
Fish don't have pockets, so I don't know how you get them to pay. But, I mean, at some point, shouldn't the beneficiaries have to pay the cost?
You would think so. And again, this all goes back to, you know, the tribes of Western Washington suing over their ability to be able to have the treaty, you know, the fish rights that they have through the treaties from, you know, 100 years ago. So, but yeah, I mean, think about that, $2 billion over by 2030. In fact, the state has just argued before the Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, to try to get this injunction thrown out. They've been fighting this case for more than 20 years now, and it's still going.
Well, I think this through, though. The idea is we've got to restore the salmon runs to what they were in the beginning, which was they were immense salmon runs. So if this really works and we're fixing all these creeks, we should have a gazillion salmon, thereby reducing the price so that salmon, instead of being, I saw $50 a pound at the Pike Place Market yesterday.
Now, that was Copper River, though, wasn't
true.
It? And they've
true.
Had reduced runs up there in Alaska, so that's inflated that price. But, yeah, salmon isn't cheap anymore.
But with these new wider stream, with all these additional creek lanes, our fish, our salmon, will be Copper River quality.
Well, that's only if you can afford to pay the toll. Some of those fish might decide not to pay the toll.
Here's what I'm saying, though. If you have that many fish with more supply, the price goes down. You can get quality Copper River salmon for like 50 cents a pound in a few years.
Well, yeah, but they're not doing this in Alaska or outside the Fraser River either. They're doing it here. And with the Copper River, only works there.
We need no steak in Alaska salmon once we got our salmon back. No?
How about a little dose of kindness after this morning? A disabled Durham, North Carolina woman says a guardian was on the other side of the phone, a guardian angel. And she had to make that call to police because the 76-year-old had her wheelchair stolen. She's dependent on that wheelchair to go anywhere outside of her living room. And when she called police, she got Detective Ron Guardino, who knows what it's like to have a loved one who's confined to a wheelchair.
For all my son's life, we've gotten, as he grows, wheelchair after wheelchair, manual wheelchair, electric wheelchair, and especially electric wheelchair because they're so expensive. Dealing with your health benefits, it takes a long time, a lot of red tape, and a lot of stuff to go through before you actually could get that wheelchair to you.
As he said, his son is confined to a wheelchair too. He's 28 years old. He has cerebral palsy. As it turns out, though, his son had just gotten a new wheelchair and had been looking for a place to donate the used wheelchair. The answer came in that phone call from Christine Burke. CBS 17 in Durham says not only did the detective give her that wheelchair, he also came back and built her a ramp so that she didn't have to keep it outside anymore, where there is a risk of it getting stolen again.
Time for a Sports Insider brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. Here he is, Danny O'Neill.
Or is it? I don't know, Dave.
Looks like Ben Gamel.
He's wearing my Ben Gamel hat.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh, Danny, is that you?
It is. Hello.
I didn't even recognize
that's
you with
exactly
that blonde
right.
hair.
Going to my Southern Oregon roots. Let
I'm
the mullet
curious.
Flow. It's business up front and party in the back,
that's
Dave.
Right. Mm. I'm digging it.
I also realized, you know your duck's bed?
Yeah.
There's a baseball saying when the bases are loaded,
yeah,
that there's ducks on the pond.
Really?
Yeah. So maybe on your next ducks read, you can work that into it.
I don't
it.
Think it's spelled the same way.
No, it's probably not. Probably and probably if you put your ducks on a pond, it'd probably be problematic for your sleep.
It is not meant to float. No, not with that Swedish pine. That's solid stuff. So tell me about the episode in Houston. I mean, about the visit to Houston and why it went so well despite the loss yesterday.
It went well because the Mariners were competitive, because they went toe-to-toe with the team that is not only the defending World Series champion, but is considered the most talented roster in baseball. And the team that, if we're all being honest, has kind of hung out there, even now with the Mariners a third of the way through the season in first place. If you ask me, do I think that they'll win the AL West? No, I don't think they will, because I think Houston is a better team. It's possible, and certainly it's much more likely, the chances of the Mariners winning it are significantly where I would have given it like a 1 in 20 shot at the start of the season. Now I think it's like 1 in 3, 1 in 4 that they've got of winning it. And they went down there and they bludgeoned the Astros in the first game, and they were competitive and took a lead late in the second one and couldn't quite hold on to it. I think that they acquitted themselves very well. Certainly going 1-1 on the road against a team that you're going toe-to-toe with in the division is considered acceptable under any circumstances. The way the Mariners are playing, I would say it was a good series, and they scored. Because that was the thing. The first time they played the Astros, they lost 3 of 4. They were really handcuffed by their starting pitching. The Mariners showed they could hit down there. That was great.
Danny, from my perspective, from a fan perspective, I want to know from you, at what point do I go, okay, this is really happening. I got to get back, because I've been so used to being disappointed all the years as a fan of going, this is the year, this is the year, this is the year.
I know what he's going to say. He's going to say right now.
No, I mean, yeah. When do I go, okay, I got to turn myself over to it, fate, whatever. This team is good.
It's honestly a personal decision, because I get the Mariners' scars. I get it. 17 years without making the playoffs. What I can tell you is that the way this team is playing, it's really fun to watch. Is it real? Are they going to win 102 games like they were on pace to earlier this week? I don't think they're that talented of a team. I think injuries could happen to their starting pitching. But what I will say is that this team is really, what they're doing, it's really fun to watch. And whether or not it holds up, it's awesome right now.
So you're trying to decide when to put on your special Day-Glow shirt? Is
right
that
now.
What it is?
I wear those anyway.
Yeah, I know.
But when do I bring out my, the hats and all the stuff I used to, because I'm always afraid of doing that and being disappointed at the end.
I told you guys this, that my wife is someone I use as sort of she's a test case in terms of fandom, because she's got a little bit of bandwagon traits to her. She likes the team when it's going really well. She stayed through all 13 innings on Friday night.
Holy moly.
It was the latest that she'd stayed in a game since 2001. Now, part of it is because she's taken some cues from me and enjoys the heckling of the players. So she was telling Brad Miller he still had MySpace.
Yeah.
Somebody was telling Duffy he was a Hufflepuff.
It's more interactive that way.
Which was there. But some of it was because it was really exciting and very... The team is fun to watch. They're 6-0 in extra inning games. They're great in close games. And are they going to sustain that? I'm not sure. What I do know is that this team is really fun to root for.
And they keep... I don't pay attention to the MLB draft
nearly
as closely. Okay,
no
good. So
one
it's not
does.
Just me. Because like when you're talking the
no
NFL, it's this huge, big production. But they added a couple of players during the draft pick. So who are they?
They did. They added Logan Gilbert, who I initially was going to call Gilbert Logan. I'm accustomed to people having two first names, like Matt Ryan, the Falcons quarterback.
John Ryan.
Yeah, Russell Wilson. Like, that's two last names. But he's got a last name for a first name, Logan Gilbert. It is Gilbert, Logan. He's a 6'6 right-hander from Stetson University. Their mascot is the Hatters, which I think is pretty funny, from the Stetson Hatters. Yeah, the Hatters. It's the same college program that produced Corey Kluber. Corey Kluber.
We like it, Corey Kluber.
Corey Kluber is one of the alumni of Stetson University.
This sounds like cultural appropriation to me. Can we move on?
I haven't learned about the new players,
all right.
But sure.
Don't worry, there were 1,500 kids drafted.
Yeah, there were a lot. Logan Gilbert, 6'6", and a hard thrower.
All right.
Okay, there
Good
you go.
Enough.
A Colin Kaepernick's legal team wants to subpoena Donald Trump in their case against the NFL.
You brought this up to me. Can you do that?
I guess so. I mean, you can subpoena anybody, whether they show up as a different matter. You think there's something there?
Well, look, when you have a collusion case and you're going to reference the fact that you haven't been signed and the sitting president of the United States referred to those players who were not standing for the national anthem as sons of bees, I guess I could see the legal argument for it. I'll be interested to see. I'd certainly be interested in what he said in the deposition.
Yeah.
Because, look, Trump's part of the story.
Yeah.
Trump,
but he can say what he wants, can't he?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Like, is it going to prove that he sent a directive to the owners? The collusion case is going to be very difficult to prove, because you're going to have to find something that said these 32 owners agreed collectively to not employ him, as opposed to 32 owners arriving at the same decision independently, right? It's not a crime to not employ Colin Kaepernick.
Right.
It's a violation of antitrust laws, which are something that we grant to sports leagues so they can create their own little competitive arena. Yeah. It's a violation of antitrust statutes.
So they would have had to tap a conversation between the owners at some point where they said, hey, let's all get together and not hire him.
Yes. And maybe their belief or their theory that they're operating on is that Donald Trump's speech in Alabama, which at that time he'd been unemployed for 6 months, Colin Kaepernick had.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be hard to argue that the actions of the president, who I guess he mentioned it when he talked to Dory Monson. Maybe Dory will get subpoenaed. No, he did. He did. President Trump said to Dory that maybe he shouldn't be in the country. Maybe Dory's going to get subpoenaed by Colin Kaepernick's legal team.
Oh, that would be
heating up.
Thank you, Danny. You bet. Our Sports Insider brought to you by your Western Washington Toyota dealers. The hat is unnecessary, by the way. You don't...
I love it. Keep it.
The Mariners have been doing great. They are on top of the AL West. They did not sweep Houston in Houston, which I guess was unreasonable for us to expect. But
they did a great job playing.
They did a great job playing. And now they head to Tampa Bay. Let's go to Rick Riz, the voice of the Mariners. Rick, how do you explain this sudden eruption of Mariner talent?
I tell you what, Jerry DePoto has done a great job over the last couple of years to put together this band of guys that know how to play the game the right way. They don't give up. You know, they've gone through so much adversity last year that they figured out, you know, how to survive and even thrive with some, you know, lots of problems with injuries last year and then also this year. But they, you know, it boils down to pitching and defense. And the starters have been outstanding, Dave and Colleen. And the bullpen is one of the best in baseball. I think the best in the American League for sure, now with the addition of Alex Colome. But they just don't give up. You know, they're 18-9 in one-run decisions. They're 6-0 in extra-inning ballgames. In late-innings situations, they just figure out a way how to score runs. The bullpen is so good that they make it really exciting. But Scott Service has done a great job with his ball club, putting it together, putting the guys in the right position to succeed. But they never feel like they're out of a ball game. And it's a great team to watch, a lot of fun to watch.
I bet. Rick, I know this is a little bit like asking a parent to pick their favorite child, even though we all know they exist. But who's your favorite Mariner to watch and why?
Well, I tell you what, there's a couple guys at the top of the order that have really, you know, sparked this ball club. D. Gordon has been an incredible addition to this team. Jerry DePoto looked at D. Gordon last year when he was with Miami and at the time was an all-star and gold glove second baseman, said, you're going to play center field because why? Robbie Cano's at second base. So he makes the transition out to center field. He works real hard and spring training, does a really nice job out there. And then, of course, the situation changes with Robbie being suspended and he goes back to second base. And he's been playing great defense at second base and getting his hits and igniting the offense and with speed, making things happen at the top of the order. And he's just so much fun to watch. He has been probably the biggest addition to the ball club. Ryan Healy, as well during the off season at first base, has been a huge addition as well. But I think the guy that probably is the MVP on this ball club is Gene Segura. He's having a tremendous year. He gets about two hits, it seems like, every ball game. And when guys were hurt in April, Segura really stepped up. And when, you know, unfortunately Robbie was suspended, Segura really, you know, took this club on his back and ran with it. And he's just having a phenomenal year, hitting .335, five home runs, 39 runs batted in, playing good defense at shortstop. So I think those two guys right there, Mike Zunino behind home plate, it's just a great team to watch. And then there's Eddie Diaz, 21 saves on the season. That's already ties the Mariners club record for the most saves before the All-Star break. We still have a month to go. And then James Paxton. What a first half for James. Five wins pitcher on the season, including the no-hitter and two complete games. So,
they bring up Robinson Cano. That's really surprising, is that they're having this run, missing one of their strongest hitters, which I guess is what I found especially surprising. They've gone through that spate of injuries. Cruz is out for a while, but and Cano's suspended for 80 games, and yet they've acquitted themselves really well. And I think people, well, just here in the studio, I'm not surprised that Colleen, being the cheerleader she is all aboard. But even Chris is thinking about making a commitment in terms of the apparel he wears. So, I mean, people are feeling the energy.
Oh, absolutely. Because it's, like I said, it's a fun team to watch. When you, you know, come back in games and you win as many one-run games as they have won this year, it's exciting to watch. You know, the Mariners have won 18 one-run decisions. They're 5-2 in games decided by two runs. They've had five walk-off wins already this year by Healy and Heredia and Segura, and walk-off home runs by Mike Zunino and Mitch Haniger in the last homestand. So that kind of grabs your attention. And what they did in April was really astounding, with four guys on the disabled list, with Cruz and Gamble and Healy and Zunino all on the DL. They went out and won 16 games. They were 16-11. They looked around the clubhouse and they said, you know what? We had a heck of a month, and we could win as a team. And then in May, D. Gordon goes on the disabled list, and then Robbie suspended, unfortunately. He's going to be out for 80 ballgames. And what they proved in April, they said, you know, we can still go out and win. And they had an even better May. They were 18-11. What they did, Dave and Colleen, is they looked around the clubhouse and looked at each other and said, hey, we got to be accountable. Just go out there and play the game the right way. Do what you're capable of doing. But there were certain guys that really stepped up. As I said, Segura, you know, offensively, and James Paxton in the starting rotation, and Eddie Diaz saving ball games, and Scott Service has done an incredible job managing this baseball team. As far as I'm concerned, he's the manager.
Speaking of that,
Jerry DePoto going out.
Can I ask you, Rick, what's with Ichiro throwing out pitches for batting practice?
Yeah, Scott went to Ichiro, I guess, a few days ago and said, hey, would you be interested in throwing some early batting practice? And Ichiro, being the professional that he is, he said, sure. So he went in the batting cages, and I think for a couple of days threw about 200 pitches to get ready. And a couple of days he threw early batting practice. So that was kind of interesting to see, just to kind of help out the guys. But he's always around, not on the roster. He's an advisor to the ball club, and he's available to the players to talk about their at-bats during the course of the game, in the video room, or in the clubhouse. So Ichiro is around to celebrate wins and help wherever he can.
All right. Rick Riz, we'll hear you tonight on the radio. Seattle against Tampa Bay, 7:10 on 710 ESPN. Thanks, Rick.
You're welcome, Dave. Thank you, Colleen.
The opioid crisis continues to grip the state. Meth is making a comeback. Drug trafficking gangs have been firing off shots, and law enforcement has just about had it, and so they've taken action. Cairo's Hannah Scott tells us they are making some progress. What's been going on?
So a big operation that was just announced yesterday by local U.S. Attorney Annette Hayes announced the arrest of more than three dozen people from several counties in a major drug ring takedown.
The defendants we arrested today have been charged with conspiring to distribute a menu of dangerous drugs, cocaine, heroin, fentanyl, oxycodone, and others. Some of the defendants are also charged with firearm crimes related to that drug dealing activity.
Yesterday's bust was the fourth operation since the start of the year that is part of a larger coordinated effort between local cops in King, Pierce, Snohomish, Skagit, and Thurston counties and various federal agencies, including the FBI and DEA. It's the largest operation in the Puget Sound area in recent history, involving hundreds of local and federal investigators used wiretaps, surveillance, and other tools to target what they describe as sophisticated drug rings in the area linked to an increase in shootings and other violent crime, specifically in the South Sound. The unprecedented local and federal collaboration is part of the Justice Department's renewed strategy to go after the most violent offenders. That's why the operations were focused in South King County, which has been plagued by shootings and other violent crime tied to dangerous drug gangs in the area. Keith Wise is the special agent in charge for the DEA's Pacific Northwest region. He helped lead the operations and says this is a huge sense of there's a huge sense of urgency.
DEA is in a race to save lives. These strategic operations have stopped some of the most violent criminal groups operating throughout the Puget Sound region from pushing dangerous drugs onto our communities, most vulnerable members facing life or death struggles against addiction. In the Pacific Northwest, we are facing an unprecedented threat from dangerous drugs, which include methamphetamine, heroin, and the emergence of synthetic opioids such as fentanyl.
Now, between the four major busts in this operation, more than 80 suspected drug dealers have been taken off the streets, along with 95 pounds of meth, 32 pounds of heroin, cocaine, some marijuana, and 75 guns were also seized. He says these operations will help slow the flow of drugs into the state by breaking the link between the regional drug trafficking groups that have been supplying the local dangerous groups dealing drugs on our streets that are blamed for this rise in violence. But he says it's about more than that.
Here in our Sound, you know, two, if not more, people die every day because of drug overdoses. Admissions for treatment are increasing as well, especially as it relates to the heroin and the methamphetamine. It was important for us to beat back that flow, to slow it down, to give our treatment and prevention people time and space to do their important work.
So a few things here. Getting violent drug gangs behind bars and cutting that supply flow. When I recently sat down with Wise, he told me that cutting the supply of meth and heroin will do a lot to lower the rising rate of overdoses here.
Users are basically combining methamphetamine and heroin together, which is called a speedball, and it's a very dangerous combination, mostly because a lot of times the methamphetamine's effects will mask the opioid effects, and essentially the users are unable to gauge overdose amounts, so there's a lot of overdoses associated with that.
And outside of these four operations that just happened over since the beginning of the year, he says the DEA is constantly working to slow the flow of drugs into the state by busting complex smuggling operations. Now, most of the drugs, he says, are coming from Mexico. Mm-hmm. They come up I-5 through in trucks, or people with personal vehicles who have these really complex, like, trap things in right. their car that stash the drugs that are difficult to find.
So had they sort of backed off before? I mean, does this represent a change in tactics or strategy for them?
It's a little so on the federal level. So last year, Attorney General Jeff Sessions put out a directive to the all U.S. attorneys to collaborate with local law enforcement and communities.
So this represents the Trump administration getting tougher on.
Tougher on it. Yes,
that explains it, because there's a sense now. Is this considered to be controversial at the DEA, or are they glad to have the handcuffs?
No,
now?
And in fact, and again, these are a lot of these people that they busted are. In these operations are some of these larger regional folks that and those people are going to see like hard prison time. This is not controversial. They want to get the drugs off the street, but they also really, really stressed that this has more aspects, right? They stop that supply flow. So it gives kind of cuts down on the number of drugs on the streets, allows a person who is an addict to get that time to get some treatment maybe, and then also lower those overdoses. So treatment is about this. Big warning that I wanted to get out there that he said, we've heard it before, fentanyl, synthetic fentanyl on the streets, which is not, it looks like your oxycodone, but it's not your oxycodone. It's something totally else as part of the reason for the rise in overdoses too.
Hannah Scott, thank you. Hannah?
You bet.